Oh, you have never read it. I think same goes for CJ as well. CJ, you got a company. There's someone else who has never read it. So, how about that? Okay, we were left the things at in this chapter. Oh my god, if I can remember where we left the things at yesterday, but yeah, this is it. Let me see if I have all the settings up all right. Finally, before I continue, I want to make sure that let me check up on Michi, who's my other lore geek at the moment.
Yes, you have many lore geeks. Just don't have any.
Yeah.
You don't happen to have any on at this moment.
No, man. Well, she was working on something. Let's see where she's at. Otherwise, I can. Like, I have done some solo sessions as well. So, but right now, I'm not solo. You're with me. It's cool. Welcome to your first guest appearance on the Stealth Pod. Yesterday, I asked people who were listening if they had any better suggestion for a name for this podcast, because right now I'm gonna stick with a Stealth Pod unless I get a better option for someone. Okay, let's see. I have been meaning to listen to it on audiobook, but you can save me a lot of money. Mixed feelings. As much as maybe I'd like to be fair in the sense of whoever puts in the effort to make a quality audiobook, you should maybe pay for it. But that being said, I have to inform you and tell you that there are, like, other than the audio books per se, where you just listen to them, there are other podcasts available which are free for everyone to listen to. One that I am highly influenced by and I'm a big fan of is Cody Olson's podcast, the Silmarillion Seminar. Back in like 2 to 3 years ago, when I started listening to them, I think I like went through all of their podcasts, and then luckily enough, even I was fortunate enough to even get in contact with him. And he did some sessions for us on Lord of the Rings Online in our kinship. And in April, I am gonna be able to go to Netherlands and meet Cody Olson, the Tolkien professor. And I think I'm delivering a speech there as well. Well, speech in the sense I'm making a paper as well, which I'll read to people there. My topic I already chosen. You weren't here yesterday, CJ, so we were just talking and Michi was with me, and then the topic kind of we were talking about like females, so we just ended up talking about the females in Tolkien's Legendarium and what their roles are. And I just thought it might be a good topic to just explore and just look overall, like how Tolkien viewed the women and how what role they have in the Lord of the Rings or in the Hobbit and the Silmarillion, and just to see the different roles that he has for it. Because much of the mainstream criticism of Tolkien is that there are not many female representations, or like not that many female characters in Tolkien's universe. While I think in my paper I'll probably contest this assumption and try to disprove it with just listing all the epic and amazing female characters that Tolkien has.
Well, you have to remember also that he comes from a different era, so he doesn't make his primary characters, although he does make a lot of his primary characters female, as far as adventure type characters.
Yeah.
He usually leaves them for male because he grew up in an era where it was male dominated.
True. Yeah, that's true. I think, yeah, much can be. It's like saying, like in the current world that we live in, like how stupid would be someone saying, well, hey, Tolkien doesn't have any trans women or men. And you're like, that's just not, wasn't a thing in his time. What do you mean he doesn't have any trans women or trans character? It's just stupid assumption to make, right? And that pretty much like is the big reply that I would have, and maybe in the paper as well, is like you're assuming or expecting something from an author who has been dead for like 50 years and was writing in an era where women had just gotten the right to vote. So you can't really expect him to be all that progressive and whatnot, right?
Exactly.
Like it's just like, what kind of assumption? Like, it's, yeah, he doesn't have any trans. But where are the transsexual elves? What the fuck is that? There are not any. What the fuck?
Well, like I said, I mean, he comes from an era where it was, you know, it was basically male dominated, and at that time, you know, it was still in the time where the females were basically made to cook and clean.
Cook and clean, yeah, that was the
those things.
And even in that era, just to give credit where credit is due, he has characters like the Eowyn, who is the only one who is able to... Hey, Michi, welcome. We were discussing the same topic we lightly touched on yesterday, women in Tolkien. And we were just trying to... discussing the era that he was writing in, and the era that he was writing about, because that can't be overlooked. The Lord of the Rings, the stories and everything, is, I think it's medieval. That's the time that they're like, there's no gunpowder, for example. It's not invented yet in Middle Earth. All the weapons are still really, really medieval. And that was it. And like I said yesterday, it's a fascinating topic to write about. And I think I'll have much to write in that paper that I'll do. How was your work, by the way? What were you working on?
I have some stuff I have to prepare before going to California to work on an event, so I should just get all that done so that I'll be prepared. I'm flying out on Tuesday.
Tuesday? You're going to California, love.
Oh, not in like a harsh. Warm place, though. Going to do some stuff in San Francisco.
You know, I'd love to visit California one day. Well, I don't know if there is. Well, actually, I think the first place I'll probably come to the United States in is probably going to be Texas. Right, CJ?
For sure.
Hell yeah. That's the first thing I'll go to. Then we'll figure out the rest. Then.
Work it out from there.
Yeah, we're going to from there. Florida probably will be next on the trip. We gotta meet up with Repo.
But I think I know, like what you were talking about, that he has specific characters in his writings that are female, or I think based mostly on probably his mother and his wife.
That can't be ignored. So, maybe some of you do know. Many of you maybe don't know. But the story of Beren and Lúthien, and on Tolkien's wife's gravestone, it says Lúthien, and on Tolkien's gravestone, it says Beren. And that was one story that he really identified with, being just a mortal man falling in love with a high elf, really a daughter of the gods, falling in love with her. And that's pretty much how he viewed his relationship, his own relationship with Edith, Edith being his wife. And he considered her as like above him, and that was the relationship pretty much. We can say like all the relationships in Tolkien. One thing we can be sure of is the men were always below the women. The women were of higher stature. Celeborn, Galadriel, Aragorn, Arwen, Beren, Lúthien. What's next? Tuor and Idril. Idril is daughter of the elves. Tuor is just a mortal man. And all the relationships like that, all the meetings of elves and men were always like one, the men were always a tier below the women. And in a world that we live in right now, where it's all about like equality and whatnot, and trying to make sure that women are represented, we have to give credit where credit is due, in the sense of Tolkien, even like 70 years ago, was writing about these stories of always being having epic and amazing female characters. And that's something that's often overlooked, maybe because like there is no women or woman in a Fellowship of the Ring, because there's like nine mortal, nine beings, nine men kind of things, but there isn't a woman in it. But there are women in Tolkien for sure, and that's like I was saying yesterday, it's something that should be researched, and maybe I'll write a thing about it. Michi, do you remember where we left off yesterday? Because I am on this, I have this in front of me. Can't for the love of
We
me.
started.
Yeah, we started the chapter and like where we ended it.
We left off at the part where it says, now it was time for a festival. That's would have been the next paragraph, because basically we just talked about Ungoliant and Melkor. And then again, Melkor is going to exploit the fact that there's a
Oh,
festival.
right. Okay. I think I got it. So that like then Melkor laughed and leapt swiftly down the long western slopes, and Ungoliant was at his side, and her darkness covered him.
That
And
was the last
now,
thing that we heard.
yeah. Next was the festival. All right. Why is okay? There we go. All right. Okay. So I'll take the first paragraph. Now it was time for festival, as Melkor knew well. though all tides and seasons were all at the will of the Valar, and in Valinor there was no winter of death. Nonetheless, they dwelt then in the kingdom of Arda, and that was but a small realm in the halls of Ea, whose life is time, which flows ever from the first note to the last chord of Eru. And even as it was then the delight of the Valar, as is told in Ainu Lindale, to clothe themselves as in a vesture in the forms of the children of Ilúvatar, so also did they eat and drink and gather the fruits of Yavanna from the earth which under Eru they had made. There's not much to talk about in this paragraph other than nicely written, and the point they're emphasized, or the writer wants to us to remember, is it's the fact that the Valar can guise themselves as in forms of the children of Ilúvatar, that is, the elves and men. Okay, Michi, you can get the next one.
Therefore, Yavanna set times for the flowering and the ripening of all things that grew in Valinor. And at each first gathering of fruits, Manwë made a high feast for the praising of Eru. When all the peoples of Valinor poured forth their joy in music and song upon Tanikutel, this now was the hour, and Manwë decreed a feast more glorious than any that had been held since the coming of the Eldar to Aman. For though the escape of Melkor portended toils and sorrows to come, and indeed none could tell what further hurts would be done to Arda ere he could be subdued again, at this time Manwë decided to heal the evil that had arisen among the Noldor, and all were bidden to come to his halls upon Tanikitel, there to put aside the griefs that lay between their princes and forget utterly the lies of their enemy. This is the first time I feel like they have singularly capitalized an enemy that I've seen.
Melkor is the enemy, and now I think everything is in the clear, because remember Manwë in the beginning was one of them who gave Melkor a chance. He was like, because Manwë really maybe cannot perceive evil, or could not perceive evil before this time. It was just not even in his mind to think that Melkor would be playing him. Melkor would be still evil and just trying to pretend to be nice or remorseful of his actions. And Manwë being so pure and good in his heart just gave him the chance of, you seem fine, you can roam freely in Aman. He was wrong. It was he was deceived. But now it's time for Melkor or Manwë to show his character, show that he is the king and he can resolve the problems that have arisen in Aman. And that he threw this feast just for everyone to have a good time, everyone having a festival, enjoying themselves, and that's it. And also everyone remembering there is just one main enemy of all the free people of Aman at the moment, the Eldar and the Valar. Melkor is the enemy. He is the darkness. He's the Dark Lord. He's everything that's wrong with the world. It's all his fault. And apparently he is remorseless. Apparently he cannot be redeemed. He's not someone who is remorseful of his actions, and he proved it. And he proved all the mercy that Manwë or Mandos took on him in giving him this chance to redeem himself. He lost his last opportunity and showed himself to be just a petty, dark lord.
Again, especially back then, not as much now in the world today because everything is so different. But back then, I think Tolkien and a lot of fantasy writers always reference their bad guys. There's always a reference basically to Lucifer, somebody who's,
oh, yeah,
who's done something that can't be
redeemed, oh, yeah,
and has fallen from grace. You know what I mean?
Hell yeah. 100% right. Not even cloaked. Not even kidding. Melkor is Lucifer of Tolkien's sub-creation that he made. Not even a shadow of doubt in that. Obviously the story is a little different, and being respective of Tolkien's own wishes regarding allegory that he puts in the preface of The Lord of the Rings, he puts it just straight in the verse. He's like, I hate allegory. And ever since I was able to detect it, I have hated it ever since. And just keeping that in mind, I wouldn't really go all out on Melkor being just a synonym of Lucifer. But his story is pretty similar, and the fact of the stories cannot really be denied. He is a fallen angel. For sure. He was one of the highest of the highest. He was the mightiest of the Valar. Just translated, mightiest of the angels, aka Lucifer, being the mightiest of the angels. And then he fell from grace. And that's pretty much the story of Melkor. He being the most powerful of the Valar. And then now he is the most evil that there is, for sure.
I just couldn't fathom that there's like still also no level of like subterfuge on the elven part here, because this isn't the first time he's like attacked during a wedding festival, you know, sort of festivities. So it's like they've never thought about laying a trap for him when it's like, oh, he's probably going to attack one of these days.
Yeah. I think they just, the poor planning for sure. They did not really. But you know what? Without like connecting, because like it's one, like we that who know the rest of the story of, at least like the vague idea of where the rest of the story of the Middle Earth goes. I think some things might be just the music of the Iluvatar. You know what I mean by that? Is something that's just predestined to happen. And I think pretty much everything that happened in the Silmarillion pretty much is like a foreshadowing, or just pretty much tells like that's how it had to be. For the rest of the story to unfold, much like it is in The Lord of the Rings as well. If like Gollum never lost the ring, what would have happened? If Bilbo never found the ring, what would have happened? And I think I connected the dots even in earlier in the story about just like connecting from Silmarillion all the way down to the end of Lord of the Rings, and you see like a pattern. But I think this might be just like one of those things that was just in the song and in the songs of the Ainur and music of the Ainur, and probably Valar forgot about it. Because it's imminent that he's he's planning to attack again. Where do you left off?
Uh, It was, I did the paragraph there for Yavanna.
Yeah.
So it should start with "there came the."
Okay. There came, CJ, you want to take this next passage?
I have no idea where the hell you people are at.
Oh, what are you in the channel?
Chapter 8. At the...
Great. You have the PDF?
Yeah, I'm looking at it, but...
Oh, yeah, it's... It's There Came the Vanyar, this one.
Nope, lost. Y'all go ahead.
Okay. There came the Vanyar, and there came the Noldor of Tirion, and the Maiar were gathered together, and the Valar were arrayed in their beauty and majesty, and they sang before Manwë and Varda in their lofty halls, or danced upon the green slopes of the mountain that looked west towards the trees. In that day the streets of Valmar were empty, and the stairs of Tirion were silent, and all the land lay sleeping in peace. Only the Teleri beyond the mountain still sang upon the shores of the sea, for they recked little of seasons or times, and gave no thought to the cares of the rulers of Arda, or the shadow that had fallen on Valinor, for it had not touched them as yet. There's really not much to discuss in this passage other than, yeah, the Vanyar are there in this amazing feast that Manwë is throwing. The Noldor are there from Tirion, so all the Tirion is empty. And the Maiar are there as well. The Maiar are mentioned once again. They're not mentioned as much as all the other events that have been going on, but Maiar, if everybody remember, are the lesser beings, like a tier below the Valar. The Valar are the top tier. They are the gods, the demigods. Yeah, just think of them as the Greek gods. And then the Maiar are just like a tier below them. That's the second tier of them. And they're just feasting, and Teleri are probably the only ones who I think they didn't really come. They are still there on the Tol Eressëa, or maybe still are on that the shadow that's coming to Valinor. They're not really aware of it. Okay, Michi, you can take the next one.
One thing only marred the design of Manwë. Feanor came indeed, for him alone Manwë had commanded to come. But Finwë came not, nor any north...
Nor any others.
I think I jumped to a strange part.
Not any others of the Noldor or Forminos.
Do you want to take this one over? Because I have to find the page again and jump to me to somewhere strange.
Okay. One thing only marred the designs of the Noldor of Forminos. For said Finwë, while the ban lasts upon Feanor, my son, that he may not go to Tirion, I hold myself unkinged, and I will not meet my people, and Feanor came not in the raiment of festival, and he wore no ornament, neither silver, nor gold, nor any gem, and he denied the sight of the Silmarils to the Valar and the Eldar, and left them locked in Forminos in their chamber of iron. Nevertheless, he met Fingolfin before the throne of Manwë, and was reconciled in word. And Fingolfin set at naught the unheathing, the unsheathing of the sword. For Fingolfin held forth his hand, saying, "As I promised, I do now, I release thee, and remember no grievance." Then Fëanor took his hand in silence, but Fingolfin said, "Half brother in blood, full brother in heart will I be. Thou shalt lead, and I will follow. May no new grief divide us." Oh my god, how naive is Fingolfin? Wow. What if... Yeah, okay, so let's break it, this passage down. Fëanor did come to this event. Finnvé, on the other hand, is like, "Nope, I'm not coming, because my son was, like, banished, or, like, is in exile, and I will just not be king of these people until my son is pretty much reinstated or whatnot." And but Fëanor did come, and he did not bring the Silmarils with him. Remember, Silmarils are something that even the Valar covet, in the sense of they respect what amazing things that Fëanor was able to create using or borrowing the light of the two trees of Valinor, for sure. And they're like, he did not bring them. He still had them hidden in his home in Forminos. And he just came as he was. And there he meets Fingolfin again. Fingolfin, just to go over them again. Fëanor, the first son of Finnvé. Finnvé, the king of the Noldor. Fëanor was a son from his first wife. After his first wife passed away. And the last thing that he gave Finnvé was Fëanor, this amazing son. Finnvé met it again. And that's when he had Fingolfin, his second son. And so Fingolfin and Fëanor are brothers, half-brothers. And Fingolfin is true of heart, he is kind, he is amazing, he's everything good that you can think of, every good quality that you can think of in a person, he has it. And even though Fëanor drew sword on him, and was punished for it by the Valar, Fingolfin here extends his hand. He's like, "Let bygones be bygone. Let's just be friends. Let's just be brothers." And I will, he even goes far ahead to see, "You lead and I will follow you. You are the king." That's pretty much all he's saying at the moment. Okay, Ichi, you take the next one.
Then Fëanor took his hand in silence, but Fingolfin said, "Half brother in blood, full brother in heart will I be. Thou shalt lead, and I will follow. May no new grief divide us." "I hear thee," said Fëanor, "so be it." But they did not know the meaning that their words would bear. It is told that even as Fëanor and Fingolfin stood before Manwë, there came the mingling of the lights, when both trees were shining, and the silent city of Valmar was filled with the radiance of silver and gold. And in that very hour, Melkor and Ungoliant came hastening over the fields of Valinor. As a shadow of a black cloud upon the wind fleets over the sunlit earth, and they came before the green mound Azelohar. Then the unlight of Ungoliant rose up even to the roots of the trees, and Melkor sprang from the mound. And with his black spear he smote each tree to its core, wounded them deep, and their sap poured forth as it were their blood, and was spilled upon the ground. But Ungoliant sucked it up, and going then from tree to tree, she set her black beak to their wounds, till they were drained, and the poison of death that was in her went into their tissues and withered them, root, branch, and leaf, and they died. And still she thirsted, and going to the wells of Varda, she drank them dry. But Ungoliant belched forth black vapors as she drank, and swelled to a shape so vast and hideous that Melkor was afraid.
Wow. Now, Sam, remember last time Ingoldine and Melkor were in that the south region and then were starting to going north to act their revenge, and Melkor convinced Ingoldine to join her, and all her troubles will be worth it. She will have enough light to have there. Well, now is the time. All the elves and men and every being in Aman is in this party that that Manwë threw. They're all there enjoying on there, and nobody is there to protect Valmar or Tirion. And that's when Melkor and Ingoldine come. Over the fields of Elnor, that's when they come. It's just like the chance, the opportunity, that was just perfect. There is no one there to protect them. And the word again used here is the Unlight, which is like just you get the concept there. The Unlight, Ungoliant is she just takes light in and makes it into unlight, means she is darkness impersonated. She's darkness personified. She's just like a black hole, or just sucks everything in, and just there's nothing there. And she was finally got her wishes and was able to suck the light of two trees. And Melkor just like uses spear to bloody smote each tree to its core, and it's just sad. And but yeah, the Valar did not anticipate it or did not think of it, did not really had any defense mechanism for it, just to leave somebody defending the bloody two trees of Valinor. There was nothing there. It's just amazing. And yeah, Ungoliant belched forth black vapors as she just drank all the light of the two trees, which were just such a unique creation that they were never ever be able to replicate it again. That was it for the trees. That's it. There will not be any more trees. That power that the Yavanna had, it's gone. It cannot be repeated again. It was just like Eru gave them like a limited dose of it. They were able to make things from it, but she cannot do that again. She cannot make them again. And we will see this point emphasized later as well. How a big of a blow that was. Somebody said hi in the chat, so hi back. So the darkness fell upon Valinor. Of the deeds of that day, much is told in the Alduinne, that Elmire of the Vanyar made, and is known to all of the Eldar. Yet no song or tale could contain all the grief and terror that then befell. The light failed, but the darkness that followed was more than loss of light. In that hour was made a darkness that seemed not lack, but a thing with being of its own. For it was indeed made by malice out of light, and it had power to pierce the eye, and to enter heart and mind, and strangle the very will. Vardal looked down from Tenny Quetil, and beheld the shadow soaring up in sudden towers of gloom. Valmar had foundered in a deep sea of night. Soon the holy mountain stood alone, a last island in a world that was drowned. All song ceased. There was silence in Valinor, and no sound could be heard, save only from afar there came on the wind through the pass of the mountains the wailing of the Teleri, like the cold cry of gulls, for it blew chill from the east in that hour, and vast shadows of the sea were rolled against the walls of the shore. Well, that's some bloody strong writing there. So, the two trees of Valinor, remember, there is no sun and there is no moon at the moment in the history of Arda. The two trees are the only lights there are. Lorelin and Telperion, the two trees of Valinor, those are the only lights there are. Lorelin is the sunlight and Telperion is the silver light, the moonlight. And Melkor destroyed them. Ungoliant sucked their light. There is darkness in Valinor. The Valinor is dark. There is no light source. And it was just a epic disaster for the Blessed Realm to be without light. Safe to assume that the rest of the Middle Earth is in darkness as well. And another really interesting thing here is that this darkness, because as you know, darkness is just the mere absence of light. That's what darkness is. But here, darkness is shown or described as something of its own. It's just not mere absence of light. Darkness is just here personified, and we know what that darkness is. The Valar probably don't know what that is, but we, the readers who know about Ungoliant, we know the darkness mentioned here is her. It's her unlight. It's her being that is just a being of complete darkness. It's a thing of its own, and that's what it is. And Varda, as you know, was the kindler of the stars, and well, she saw this shadow gloom over, and yeah, that so there was silence. There is everybody is in panic. Everybody is just like speechless, and they just don't know what happened. The light is gone. It's dark, and they were like having a festival, and it's just like all come to a halt, and only sound they hear is just the Teleri, the wailing, because the Teleri, you know, are in Tol Eressëa, which is just a little island away from Valinor, and they're just seeing, oh, what happened? It's all dark in Valinor. It's like all dark there. There used to be light there. It's not. There is no light anymore there. And yeah, that was it. There was just shadow and darkness in Valinor. That's why the name of the chapter, The Darkening of the Valinor. CJ, you want to take the next one?
All I see is lions.
Now you gotta get the fire up. You know, I see what's happening. I know what you mean now. Okay, where is that, Miji?
I think you got up to Bud Manwe.
No. Let me add a CJ.
You mean on the PDF? I'm reading directly from the.
Yeah. Check Discord. You should have the access to the book club now, and there you'll see the ebook. Just download that and you won't see the lines. I have no idea why the lines are appearing, by the way. I can recheck it. I have no idea why the lines are appearing.
I get that. It says load more messages and then hit joined and it says load more messages.
Oh yeah, just join it. It's
I hit it. It just says load more messages.
Wait, well, I think I have a better way. Rules. You should have full access now. in the book club channel. Last link is the ebook. You can just download it.
Okay, so what page in this version are you guys at? Sorry, I have it.
The same. I think we're in the same page. 36 out of 180.
Okay. My ebook is not a PDF, so it it morphs depending upon where.
Do you get the PDF, CJ?
Yeah, I'm just having to do some other shit.
Yeah. Just download it and then you can open it up.
Okay, now I see what page we ended on.
You're at Padmanabhi.
But Manwe, from his high seat, looked out, and his eyes alone pierced through the night, until they saw a darkness beyond dark, which they could not penetrate, huge but far away, moving now northward with great speed, and he knew that Melkor had come and gone. Then the pursuit began, and the earth shook beneath the horses of the host of Arome, and the fire that was stricken from the hooves of Nahar was the first light that returned to Valinor. But so soon as any came up with the cloud of Ungoliant, the riders of the Valar were blinded and dismayed, and they were scattered, and went they knew not whither, and the sound of the Valaroma faltered and failed. And Tulkas was as one caught in a black net at night, and he stood powerless and beat the air in vain. But when the darkness had passed, it was too late. Melkor had gone whither he would, and his vengeance was achieved.
Just wow. The bad guy won in this instance. Manwe, as you know, when he sits upon his seat upon Tenikvittel, he is able to perceive much of everything that's going on in all around Arda. And he just could not perceive this darkness. His eyes or whatnot, his power just could not see beyond this darkness that was there. That was obviously the unlight of Ungoliant. And he perceived, okay, that's something shady. That's probably Melkor. And then the Valar just tried to act upon their instinct and try to go after it. So Orome went, and like Nahar, as you know, is the steed that Orome has. But Ungoliant is, she is pretty powerful, and her unlight, her cloud of darkness, her nothingness, her darkness and personified was able to even blind the Valar, and they were scattered. They didn't know where to go, which direction. They were confused, and she was that much powerful after sucking the two light, the two trees of Valinor, the pure light, the pure energy that those two trees had. She will be able to take their energy and create this amazing cloud of darkness. And even Tulkas is just like in like nothing, as he can't see anything. He's just swinging left hooks and right hooks, and to no avail. Nothing is happening there. And he was just powerless. And when that darkness was just over and they could see, they could all see again, well, Melkor was gone. And he avenged his himself. He avenged his capture. He avenged everything. Yeah. Okay. Do you wanna finish it here or begin the next chapter? What do you guys think?
Maybe wrap here and the next chapter
Yeah.
is more like.
How long has it been? I can't have a time track. Okay, yeah, we're an hour in. Okay. Yeah. An hour should be enough. And then yeah, maybe from next time we'll have the slides and everything. Be make it
Next
more
chapter,
cool.
chapter 8, right? Of the
Yeah,
new
next chapter.
Dalinar.
No, next chapter is chapter 9 of the Flight of the Noldor, which is
Gotcha.
such a foreshadowing name, because well, we know from that chapter the Noldor are just fucking off. So, well, thank you for coming today, CJ, and thank you for watching all the five people who are watching us on Twitch and live, and thank you for everybody who will listen to it on YouTube or on Spotify later.